So I'm here just outside Belturbet, and I'm talking to Anthony and to Marie O'Reilly. And I'm talking to you both about that horrific bombing that happened 45 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it came very close to you, didn't it, Tony? I mean, it was your... Or Anthony, sorry. Yeah. It was your sister who...
Yeah, it was sister, Geraldine, yeah.
So, but before we talk about your background first. Did you grow up here, and did you always live in this area?
Oh, yeah, I grew up here, yeah. And, I mean, father and mother is from around here as well, so myself and my family always grew up here.
And where exactly?
In Stickhall Old School. It was an old school here, and my father bought it and done it up into a dwelling house. And so my mother went to school here, and I went to school here, and until they built the new school. So we were always in the area.
So you lived all your life in the school that you were educated in?
Yeah, in the school that I was educated in, yeah.
My, and who was your teacher?
The teacher was Mrs. Kelly and Master McGovern.
Where did they come from?
Mrs. Kelly, I think, was from... I forget where Mrs. Kelly was from, but Master McGovern now was... He was from Corley, I think, down that direction.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, down that direction, as far as I know, Master Jerry.
And was your dad, was he a builder, or was he a tradesman, or was he a farmer?
No, he was a factory worker. He worked in dairy shoe supplies in Belturbet all his life.
Oh, they gave great employment in the area, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Dairy shoe supplies and the Bostick.
Yeah.
Was all in Barham's Mill, and there was a lot of employment around Belturbet at that time.
So growing up in the area then, how would you describe Belturbet, and was it a thriving locality? Was it a place always buzzing, or was it?
It was always buzzing, yeah. It was always cross-border, people coming in and people going across the border, and, you know, trading and that. It was very busy town, yeah.
You know. And what did you do yourself after?
I was a builder.
Sorry, were you always a builder? Sorry, after school, what did you do? You went off...
Well, I went into a shop in Belturbet, but I worked in a grocery shop.
Yeah.
And we went round the country in a van selling groceries, myself and the Miley Burke, his name was, he drove the van, and we went round selling groceries. So until I came to 17... And then I went on the buildings.
Yeah.
So I was on the buildings then for 17 or 18 years. And
yeah.
So then it started out on my own. So.
And so the 45 years ago, can you talk about that? What exactly happened?
Well, myself and Marie we were in Glasgow. I went to Glasgow to work, myself and Marie. So. We were over there for 12 months, and so we came back home for a holiday and that. And so the next thing then, we stayed. My father and mother was kind of didn't want me to go, I think, you know, didn't want me to stay away. So we came back home, and then we had our first daughter, Caroline. And so we were home here for a good while, wasn't it then?
Yeah, well, I was pregnant with Caroline when we were coming home, so
yeah.
Caroline was then a year old when it happened, yes.
So when did you get married?
1970, in Glasgow.
And where originally did you come from, Marie?
Belturbet.
Oh, so you...
Yeah, we're local.
Did you meet in Glasgow, or no. Why did you get married over there? Was it because...
Well,
because Anthony was working there, is it?
Yeah,
I suppose partly was that too, yeah. It was just at that time, now, my mum didn't want me marrying anybody. Uh-huh. I mean, I would have been only 18, you know. So I think we'd done a bunk.
Oh, I see.
Well, anyway, yeah, that's how we got. We went to Glasgow together, and yeah. Anthony's two sisters were over in Glasgow at that time, so we went over to them. And it was there that we decided then, okay, we'll get married here, because I don't think my mother would have given permission, but sure, I was 18 anyway. I didn't need her permission.
Oh, that's so, that's not. And yeah. And so, would you have settled down there if Anthony, if your parents didn't call you home?
Well, it's possible, yeah. But I was always a kind of a home. Anyway, I always liked the home, you know. So I did.
Yeah.
I always liked to stay around home if I could. But I was settling in, you know.
And did you think maybe it was a nice place to bring up your daughter then, when you had your first child? Mm-hmm. Did you?
Yeah, she was born here, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we preferred to stay in Ireland than go back.
Yeah. Good.
And so when you came home then, that's when you started the grocery business, is it? Or what happened when you came home?
Oh, when I came home, I was on the buildings before I went, and then when I came home as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's only when I was 14 or 15 I was in the grocery shop.
Yeah.
Until I came to 17, and then I went to work on the buildings. So when we came back home then, I was on the buildings as well, and that.
And was it good? Like, I mean, were things good at that time?
Oh, yeah, there was plenty of work at that time, yeah. Plenty of work.
And what builder were you working for?
I was with Francis Smith and Sons, Bloody Hayes, County Cavan. So they were a building contractor.
Yeah.
So I was building and plastering for them and doing everything, yeah.
Okay, and then at that time, were you living here in this place?
Yeah, we're living here because, you see, it was a big house and my father and mother lived in one end of the house and I done up this part of the house here.
This was all the old school now?
This was all the old school, so I built on this extension. Yeah. So I lived here and my father and mother lived in the upper end of the house. So.
Okay.
Along with Geraldine and
Along with Geraldine and, yes. And that. She was the youngest of the family.
Oh, I see.
She was there all away working in different places.
Yeah.
So she was the only one that was at home, wasn't she, that mm-hmm. time? Yeah.
And so she was very close to you, was she?
She was. She was very close to me now. She came everywhere with me. And anywhere I was going in the car, she came with me.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Football matches or anything, you know.
Yeah.
It was always, she wanted to come with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was very close.
And when the bomb went off in Belturbet, can you tell me exactly what happened prior to that? Where were you and where were you going?
Well, we were here in the house here, myself and Marie and the daughter, and Caroline, the youngest daughter. And my sister, Frances, she's married to Marie's brother. And she lived the other side of the town. So they came out to that evening to visit my mother and father in the upper end of the house. So they decided to go home around, it must have been around 9:45 or so. So I went up to, they told me, asked me would I leave them back in when they were ready. So I told them to give us a shout when they're ready to go home. And I'll run them in the car, the other side of the town, Belturbet. So they came down around 9:50 and said they were ready to go. So I said, that's fair enough. So, yeah, I think you were thinking of coming, weren't you?
Yeah, I told you to hold on. I was knitting at the time.
Yeah, she was knitting.
I needed stuff, milk and bread, and I was going to go in with them. Yeah,
and then I went on up. There's a communicating door up from my father and my mother down. So I went up anyway, and Geraldine was in the room, and she came out and... She came out of the room and she knew we were going into town. She says, I'm going to get a bag of chips with you when I'm going.
Yeah.
Geraldine, she was doing her homework in the room. So I said, fair enough. So we ran in, we got Francis and my sister on into town and I let them off at Marion Park at their house. And myself and Geraldine came back in and I stopped outside of the chip shop and Belturbet. And I was sitting waiting there, I was double parked, she was just running to get the bag of chips. So I was sitting there and the next thing I didn't know what had happened. I thought it was after falling asleep and dreaming. I heard no bang, nothing. And the car in front of me was on fire and the car behind me was on fire and there was rubble everywhere and wires hanging everywhere. And I must have been stunned for a while. because it seems to have lifted me car and steel went in and out through it where I was sitting in it, and that was probably the car that saved me, I'd say, that I didn't get hit with steel. It lifted the car up and then the steel went out through it,
mm-hmm.
coming from the bomb. So I didn't realise what had happened at all. I thought it was after dreaming or something, or falling asleep. And so I was kind of half out of the car then, and I went down the street, and I asked someone that was standing in the shoes what happened, and they said there was a bomb. And then I realised that Geraldine was with me. So I went back up the street to call Geraldine, and that, but someone came along then and brought me down the street, and they said the knock up was too dangerous. And so I went down the street anyway, and they brought me into it was the widow's pub, and they brought me in there and sat me down, and then the doctor came after a while, and the sergeant in Milthorwood came in. So they brought me back up the street then to see whether they identified Geraldine. So they said there was bad news and that, so...
That must have been a very hard thing to do.
It was hard, yeah, it was very hard. So they brought me in anyway, and I seen her laying on the floor there, and I knew by her clothes and that every place was in darkness, so they shone the light on her. So I said, that was Geraldine, all right. So then I realised that she was gone, you know.
Yeah.
So it was very tough, you know, and I didn't know what to do then. So they brought me back down the street, and the doctor gave me an injection, and then brought me to hospital later on. So I was cuts and bruising, you know, but I don't think there was anything serious. I couldn't feel anything anyway, so they kept me in the hospital overnight. And
yeah.
So then I wanted to get out the next morning, because to get home, you know, so.
You signed yourself out.
Signed myself out, yeah. I think I did, all right.
But how did you manage to escape that? Because...
Just what I don't know,
yeah.
You know. Because I couldn't believe it when I seen the car after. It was just completely in bits, you know, and holes out through the roof that something went in. And
true.
The blast must have lifted the car up a bit.
Yeah.
And that's what saved me, I'd say.
Did you have to bring the news home then to your mother and father?
No, I didn't. I think news... Yeah. Realised something had happened in the town. You heard the bang, didn't you, out here? Yeah.
So what did you do, Marie, then?
Well, we heard the bang, and we went out to the door, all of us, actually, you know, and assumed that it was the bridge had been blown up again. That's what we thought, you know. But and we just chatted amongst ourselves, and then a car went past and stopped, and they said, oh, been a bomb in Milthorwood. And of course then I knew that Anthony had gone in there, and Geraldine had gone in, and we didn't know what to do. And I think it could have been the priest that came out then to your mum, but I took it into my head anyway I was going to go into Milthorwood. So I left. I think my mum had come as well. She was with Miss Claire Murray. They were coming from Killeshandra after being at Bingo, and she came in and she stayed with Caroline. And I think Geraldine McGee and Carmen McGee, maybe, they walked into town with me, because we didn't know, and like if there was tragedy or anything, like we didn't know exactly what had happened. I just knew that they were in there, and we walked in. Like I say, it's not that far in, and when we went in on the diamond, it was cordoned off by the soldiers, and a soldier came over and said, "You can't get in here." And I think it was Geraldine McGee said, oh, this woman here, she's her husband, and her sister-in-law is in the town, and just wanted to know if, you know, what had happened, do you know anything? And he says, well, all I know is there were two killed,
mm-hmm.
and a lot injured. He actually said a boy and a girl, or a young man and a girl, you know, and I thought, oh... But they couldn't give me any information, and they said then that they'd all been taken to the hospital. So we turned then and we walked back out of town again, and I think Desmond and Geraldine McGee said they'd run me up in the car the next morning to the hospital, which they did do. Yeah, and in the meantime, others came to the house and said that what had happened, and that, Anthony was okay, but that Geraldine was killed.
Yeah.
So... the doctor came out, and he was there giving everyone, he wanted to give me something to keep me calm and that. And I said, no, I had Caroline there. So I said, no, I just want to, just stuck Caroline in my arms and brought her into the bed with me and stayed in the room, in the bedroom. And I don't know what went on up the kitchen, but that's where I was.
That's very safe. Yeah, just felt safe.
Yeah,
safe.
Yeah. So I didn't need any tablets or anything like that. That I just wanted to hold her.
Yeah, and so the aftermath, the carnage, the loss of life, and including your sister. Obviously, it affected you and it hurted you. Did you think about the other boy at all? That, you know, there was another young lad.
Aye, that's right, Patrick. Yeah. Patrick Stanley. He was only 16 as well. And he was killed as well. And, you know, it was very hard on them as well. And that father never gave up till the day he died there back 12 months ago. He never gave up looking for justice, you know. He continuously all the time.
Yeah.
He died anyway, he never got it.
Yeah. How did you cope, Anthony?
Well, I coped, yeah. It was hard at the time, you know. And it always came into my mind, you know, no matter when I went into the town or when I went anywhere, you know, where there was cars or whatever it was, in any town, I always kept looking to see would some car explode or something, you know. It was always in my mind. And,
yeah.
You know, and then you think, what if I hadn't come home, if I had to stay away, that everything would have been all right. And, you know, you kind of keep blaming yourself for the things that you decided to do when such much tragedy came out of it then. That, you know, and my sister Frances was the same. She blamed herself for coming out that night, and why did she go home at that time? And,
She was expecting twins, and of course when she heard what happened, she was rushed into the hospital as well. And only there was a gynecologist there, a new man that had come in to the hospital, like she would have lost her own life and the life of her twins as well, because she went into labour after that. So.
Oh, did she?
Yes, yeah. She was very, very...
And what brought that on? The stress?
The shock. Shock.
Was there any kind of treat, anybody helping afterwards? Was there any counselling? Was there anybody to talk to you or to help you? Or
not really, you know, just nobody, no help.
Yeah.
I just picked up and went on, and you know, there's no counselling.
So my mum would say, she said, you need to pick yourself up now and carry on.
My father was hard on my father and mother, because she was the youngest of eight of us, and she was the last one kind of in the house with them, and you know, and so it killed them really. They didn't last much time after and that. You know, they were always, but they never talked about it, you know, or never blamed anybody, or you know, they kept it all to themselves and that. So it's only really after they died that we could talk about it, you know, because they didn't want it.
Didn't even want it mentioned.
Want it mentioned at all, you know. They couldn't. They kept it all bundled up in them. I don't think even they got any counselling or nothing at either, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think they did.
And so did the town, was it hard to live here after that? I mean, were you... you know, kind of every time you went into the village, I'm sure you were thinking, you know, what happened here at this spot.
Yeah, you would. You'd think of the spot, and you know, you'd be always thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so did they. Tell me about the people themselves in the town. Did they obviously sympathised with you, you know, and sympathised with the family, but. Did you feel that it brought people together a little bit, or did they just...
Well, the people in the town as well, you know, didn't talk about it at all.
I think they were in shock.
I think they were in shock as well.
Nobody talked about it.
You know?
Yeah.
Just closed down.
Yeah. You know, and it was very rarely mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, there's only if you were out socialising or that to someone, maybe they had a few drinks in them, they'd come along and talk about it to you, and you know, they'd tell you who they thought that done it and all this, and you know, yeah. which I, you know, the people that had mentioned had realised that they had nothing got to do with it at all, but they tried to tell you then that they knew who done it and all this, you know.
And how did that play in your mind?
It did, it played in my mind, you know, when you're always suspicious of people, but I didn't really, you know, let it get in on me too much, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't, but...
And did you feel like, you know, wanting to get your own back, you know, was there a kind of a...
Well, you'd feel that, you know, you'd feel that, but you just, you know, you were just up against a wall. You couldn't be sure of anything, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't be sure what...
Well, nobody ever admitted to it, to say, so there was nobody to blame as such, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't vent your anger at anything. There was nothing there to vent your anger at, you know, so it was...
But was there any kind of suggestion, maybe, that who it might have been?
Oh,
or?
Yes, yeah. There would have been, yes.
Mm.
But nobody actually brought to justice at all?
No, no.
And does that anger you, the fact that nobody was made answerable for this terrible atrocity?
Oh, yeah, you'd like to see somebody brought to justice, but no one ever claimed the responsibility for it, you know. So they knew about some gang that done it all right, but they don't know whether they done built Hurlburt or not the same. You see, there was bombs in different places the whole night, that all round Monaghan and Donegal and Pettigo and Donegal, and they all went exploded nearly at the same time, you know. So so it was just, there was some gang like that done it, and but there was a lot of gangs at that time, you know.
Of course, yeah. And but I would imagine that life was tough after that. Then, you know, trying to live with that, and at the same time to try and rear a family. And I'm sure that you pulled together, and
oh yeah,
it helped you to survive.
It and she, so Geraldine. Well, Caroline was a year old the next day. Geraldine died on the 28th. And Caroline was a year old on the 29th. And Geraldine had the present bought for Caroline to give it to her the next day, you know. So it was hard and stuff. And she was always kind of babysitting for us as well, Caroline, or Geraldine, you know. So
that was tough too.
It was tough,
To witness that happening,
And then the bedroom then was left, all her stuff was left in the bedroom, nobody touched anything, while her parents were alive, you know. Her costume was hanging up at the back of the door, and her school uniform was there, and even the presents that she had got was there. Nobody touched anything. So that was left like that until Mary Kate and Joe died, I think.
Yeah.
And then the other sisters then, I think,
cleared out all. And did your own daughter... or your family, you know, growing up, did they ask questions about what happened?
No, they didn't, because nobody talked about it, you see. It wasn't until the grandchildren went actually to school here that they were doing a project and the history of the town and the bombing came up. Which of them was it, Anthony?
I think it was Carmel, was it?
It might have been Carmel, it must have been Carmel, the youngest one.
Yeah.
And she came back.
So this is your grandchild.
Your grandchild.
No. So it took a whole generation.
Carmen was our daughter. No, I know you're thinking of Nicola this time round.
Ah, it was Anthony and Danny, wasn't it? The grandchildren.
Out of the tech.
Yes. Yeah. Anthony and Danny. Oh, I see. Yeah. And so they came home then and said, what happened to them?
Yes, exactly. And decided then to say it, opened it up then to them, you know. So that's when we got the papers and that, and let them. I had kind of kept all the cuttings and stuff, you know, of what was going on. But the our own kids were aware, because we were involved in different projects and won't. It wasn't really until they started putting up the monuments to different people, you know, that in the Troubles, you know, when Bertie was as he should.
Yeah, tell me, how did that come about? Did people want a monument put in the town?
Well, I don't know if the people wanted it.
No, I don't.
But Bertie wanted it.
Yeah. Well, there were monuments going up, and we, just as forgotten was, they got in contact with us, you see, years down the line, you know, before Bertie started doing this. And they
this
had
is
got,
the T-shirt now, Bertie.
Yes, Aaron, yes. Yeah. And it was Margaret, was it?
Margaret Irwin,
yeah. And then she was pushed forward too for this monument, because we're putting up monuments other places. So they asked them what would we like to put up. So a grant, I think, was got for that. And the different ones were involved. You've probably seen the monument in Belturbet. And we chose that particular one. So. Mm.
And when it was, did they come to you and
yes,
ask
they did,
you,
yes.
what you'd like?
Yes, and, they and, did, yeah. And they had different ones, had sketches, I saw them all there still. Mm. Yeah, and the one that we chose was the boy and the girl. Mm. As in the likeness of Geraldine and
Patrick,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a lovely monument,
yes.
and a nice reminder.
Yeah.
If you needed to be reminded that you know that these people that their memories will be kept, you know, that
no, I didn't
incident
right, yeah.
will be kept alive.
Because up until then, you see, it was never talked about, and until one journalist decided to do an article and they called it the Forgotten Bomb, because no one ever talked about it. So that kind of brought things to the fore, you know, when journalists start taking interest.
Yeah.
In what happened, you know. Like, we would never have gone to anybody if they came to us, you know, and started asking questions and stuff. You couldn't even do an interview.
No.
It was so hurtful, you know.
Well, in the beginning, I couldn't do an interview at all, nearly.
Yeah.
Without breaking down, you know.
Ah, sure,
so
of course.
It's taken years
yeah.
and years, yeah.
And so when you now look at what's been done, you know, people are more and more interested in trying to bring sides together, and how did would you like to see other people who were affected by the Troubles maybe coming together and meeting and talking? Because it's when you talk about these things that maybe it's a good healing as well, isn't it?
I think so. I've seen that with Anthony.
Yeah.
Because like I said, he could never talk about it to anybody. Right. And then through doing different talks, he used to get me to do it, just say, he wouldn't do it, and then gradually he started doing it himself. So I thought, right, okay, this has done some good to him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was extraordinary how you survived it yourself.
Yeah,
and
it
just
was very.
At you, it has left marks on you.
Yeah, I'd left marks all right, but you were picking out glass enemies.
Bits of glass for a long
for
time,
ages.
Yeah.
Wee bits of windscreens and cars. Do you know wee tiny bits
on his back and his head? Right. Yeah,
you know, but there was only 22 or 3 at the time, so I was
22.
Young and I didn't realise. Maybe I could have been hurted in it, you know.
But you weren't thinking of pain at the time.
I wasn't thinking of pain at the time, you know. So I wasn't.
You were only just young people ourselves. I mean,
of course,
yeah.
When you think you were
21 there with a year-old baby and he was 23, you know, it's...
Yeah. You had to grow up fast.
Very fast.
But, you know, it started. And did you look after your parents then? Did you?
Yeah, we were always here then. With them, you know, and used to drive them into town and that when they got on in years and that. So then my father got sick and he was on dialysis and that, so he took a heart attack and died. And then my mother died in about 10 or 15 years after.
Mm.
So she did. So.
And what about your siblings then? Do they keep in touch with you and are they all living at home, or are they living abroad in different places?
My daughters, yeah.
No, your brothers and sisters.
Our brothers and sisters, they're all... no, there's one of them living outside the town, Francis, all the time, that's married to Marie's brother. And I have a brother in Galway, and I have a brother in America. And I have one in the...
Kathleen's in
Armagh, Tregavin.
Okay.
And so that's them all. But they come now and again and on different occasions and that. So
yeah.
But after the mother and father went to visit, doesn't be as often as...
Of course not, But is the unveiling of the monument, that must... What do you remember about that day? Was there a big crowd?
There was a big crowd, yes. It was nice.
It was lovely.
Can you remember the year? When was that unveiled?
I can't say offhand, but I have... It's there in the book. Give you the date again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've done a little CD on it, you know, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very nice. Mel French, was it?
Mel French.
She was the one that done the monument, yeah.
Nice girl.
And in a way, I suppose it was a bringing together of everyone in the village as well.
As you say, there
were a lot of people who lost their property and their cars and everything.
Yeah. It's good people got injured as well, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
So it was.
And sorry.
It's just as strange that you know there were so many injured in that, but no one ever got together. All those people who were injured and it was affected. It's a pity they didn't get together and talk about it. But I don't know all who got injured. You knew a few of them, all right?
Aye, there's the Littles and there's Jimmy Allen and there was Gorby. Mm-hmm. What do you call him? The Gorby one, Leonard.
Mm.
Yeah. There was a good few injured, you know.
Yeah. It was a question of picking up and
carrying on, yes.
Yeah. Well, it would be lovely to even at this stage, you know, to come together and to meet.
Mm.
But what in those years, passing over the border, which you're so close to, and having that terrible memory, did it make it easier or harder crossing over the border, going into the other side? Did you keep away?
No, we used to cross it all right, but it was hard. There was always checkpoints and that. You know, there was always some... You know, there was... It wasn't too much trouble, but, you know, it was always going in to the border. But, you know, you always felt when you crossed the border at that time, you know, that there was... You had to be careful and, you know, and had to watch where you were going and...
Oh, yeah, and...
You know, so it was...
Yeah, and being stopped and...
Stopped and searched and...
Searched and all of that, too. Yeah.
That's right.
Who was the councillor in the town at the time?
It was John Scott. He was the town councillor.
And did he always... Did he push for anything at any stage to happen, like...
He kept pushing. Only for John, I don't think much would have been done at all, but he kept pushing at all the meetings and kept doing... He'd done everything he could, John. You know, I knew John well. I used to do work for John, some building work at his house and that, and John was very, very helpful, you know, for...
All down through the years?
All down through the years, yeah. John kept bringing it up and kept, you know...
Because it wasn't a popular conversation.
No, they didn't. He said any meeting he brought it up was, nobody was backing it. He got no backing on it at all. And until then, Bertie and Fianna Fáil and that. And so, with Margaret Irwin and the Justice of Forgotten and all them and the town council Cavan County Council, was Paul Mulligan at the time, and then the Gaul got together then and said that there would be something done about it and there'd be a monument put up if we could. So Bertie were hearing back the whole lot, you know, when he came and he met us here several times and that, so.
Yeah.
He kept, fair play to Bertie, now he did do a lot for it as well.
Yeah.
You know, he got the funding for it and that, so.
Are were you delighted to see the Good Friday Agreement and the
oh yeah, peace being made? I've been delighted with that, yeah. The Good Friday Agreement was a great job, yeah. So it was.
And of course the amnesty, all the prisoners were released. Was that a good or a bad thing, do you think?
Well, so it just had to be done, I suppose, and you know, it was people, I suppose, after committing murder and that, who got released and yeah. that, you know. So there's not much you could do about that, you know. It was just part of the agreement. And,
yeah.
And both sides, you know.
Do you know, we're just talking here about John Scott, because John Scott was a great man to, to get things going.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And you need somebody like that, don't you, to
of course,
to get
yes.
things mm-hmm. moving and, yeah. And that. And but we were talking about crossing over the border as well, and you know, did you see it as a different country up there? You know, it's only just a couple of miles away from you, yeah. if even that.
That's right. We did actually, yes, yeah. Because I know myself and Geraldine, we used to go down on the bikes to get the butter. We smuggled the butter across. So, I mean, it was only down the road, you know. So, yeah, but I probably thought it was like going to England, you know. We didn't think much about these things at all. Like, we were pretty young at the time and didn't take all that in, politics or anything like that, you know. Because, I mean, I worked in the town all my, like, when I was growing up, you know, in the drapery store.
In Belturbet.
Yes, yeah. I remember Anthony working down in Burke's. So I used to go down there for biscuits for the cup of tea in the shop, back up again. Teresa's on the Dime, and that was the name of the store. It was a haberdashery, you know, and fashion. And lots of ones came in over my back across. Even the ones that were shot that time. You know, we would have known them, the Bullocks, you know, as customers.
Oh, where were they shot?
Over across the border.
In Fermanagh, just... across the border.
And so when they were shot,
No, they. This is before now the bombing. Yeah. I'm saying when I were younger, you know, after school I went into work in the shop in Belturbet, because I'm from Belturbet as well.
Yeah.
And they would have been customers.
Oh, okay.
In the shop, yeah.
And when you heard that they were killed, then,
felt really bad. You know, like, gosh, I remember them going in and out of the shop. Different ones, I would have remember going in and out of the shop.
Was there support for the IRA here, generally?
But generally there would be, support now, all right, yeah.
And, you know, when you saw the I suppose the continuous threat, you wouldn't have seen the IRA as terrorists, would you? Or would you have seen them as...
Well, no.
What would you have seen them as?
Well, it's hard to know what they were. You know, they were just... We're just fighting back, as you know. That's what you kind of thought in your head. They were fighting back, you know, kind of looking for the rights and that, you know.
Yeah.
But I suppose in the long term, they were looking to get the British Army out of Northern Ireland, and even they wanted a united Ireland. You know, that was the main.
But was it at all cost, or you know?
Well, it was that time. But now it's through peaceful means, you know. But that time it was, you know, it was just bombings and one side killing the other, you know, and innocent was getting killed. And
Because, I mean, you lived, every morning you turn on your radio, there was a bombing, there was a shooting, and it was continuously.
All the time, yeah.
My sister, she wouldn't come home out of England for years. I think Caroline's wedding was the first time she came home. Her daughter's wedding was the first time she came out of England. She was still so scared to come over.
Imagine that.
Yeah, she went over to England when she was around 18.
Yeah.
Her and my brother. And he used to come over and back, all right, but she didn't.
So
we used to go visit her, but she would never come over here.
Yeah. It was like a war zone.
Yeah. She married an Englishman too. I think that was part of it. She was afraid that something might happen because she married an Englishman.
Yeah. You know, so. Imagine, but was this in people's minds, you know, you had to be careful about who you married even, you know, or who you worked with.
Oh, who you worked with and who you married as well and who you were. You know, even in pubs there you had to watch who you were. Talking to him, you were mixing with him, you know, it was all just you didn't know who you were talking to.
You know. And did you know any of these fellas? Did you know members of the IRA?
Oh, yeah, I would, yeah. I know, yeah.
And would you think, I'm only just asking these questions, would you think that they were doing a good thing or a bad thing? And as you say, they were trying to fight for a united Ireland and
yeah, probably that was what they were. You know, there'd be a lot of supporters that wouldn't be involved in any shootings or anything, you know. To be supporting the IRA.
You would have been told that, they got shot because they were informers. That's why they got shot. You know, that's the type of talk it would have been. As much as to say they deserved it, these people, you know. It's not until you look back and realise those times that we did live in. They were really traumatic when you think about it, you know, watching over your shoulder, you know.
Yeah.
Very scary times.
Yeah.
Although we didn't realise it, while we were living through it, only when you look back and see, goodness me, why did we not leave? You know, if we had any sense, we would have got out.
But you're running a business here now and you're
doing. Yeah.
And I'm sure there are lots of people coming down from the north of Ireland staying with you from time to time.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, I'm actually with the bed and breakfast business, I started it, must be 2005, was it? Yeah. And it was doing well at the time, and then it went off with the tourists, you know. And answering this ad in the paper for the HSC wanted to do supported lodgings for kids, and that's what I'm at the moment, you know, is doing supported lodgings. But I had to give up the bed and breakfast.
Oh.
And the reason for that was they brought two little ones to the door and... for emergency accommodation, this was about 6 years ago, and they couldn't find a home to take the two of them in. So they asked, would I do the fostering for these two kids? And I said, okay, I'll take the two kids in. But then I had to close the B&B. So those kids are grown up and gone now, so I decided I'm going to start the B&B again, so, along with supported lodgings. So that's what I'm at the moment. I'm not doing the fostering now, just the supported lodgings.
Yeah,
and we have a section of the house that's cordoned off of that, where they have their own ensuite bedroom and a kitchen dining room and their own front door, you know. But I have a communicating door that I can go in and out if I need to.
I see.
But they can't access here.
Are you still working, Anthony, or are you...
No, I'm retired now, yeah. Retired.
Taking life easy, are you?
Taking it easy now, yeah.
Listen, it was lovely speaking to both of you, and thank you very much indeed for that.
That's good. That's good. Thank you.